Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. I'm Jo.
And I'm Jerry. And this is podcast 10B, which is the last podcast of series two. In the most recent podcast a few weeks ago, we had a discussion about the ecological approach to social work and how we'd use that approach to inform all of series one and two, starting with ourselves as social workers in the centre and looking out to the context around us. And we particularly talked about how biology, behaviour and environment affect us and how we can use our own attachment, regulation and competency model to exert as much control as possible over our biology, behaviour and environment. And we discussed that when we know ourselves well and we understand our context well, then we're better able to empathise with others. And we're really pleased that we've just heard from one of the teaching partnerships for social work in England that they want to link our podcasts to their website, which is really great news.
It's great news.
Yeah, so anyone else who's keen to share helpful social work, please do link to our site, www.helpfulsocialwork.com, as a resource for social workers. And we've also just set up a Facebook page, Helpful Social Work Podcast, so you can get updates that way as well. And you can always let us know what you think by visiting our website or by commenting on iTunes. And we do look forward to hearing from you.
Absolutely. And this is our last podcast for series two. And like last year, I don't know if you remember, at the end of series one, we did a review of the year. And so we've decided that this is a good time for us to do a review, take stock, look back on what's happening, and to think about the meaning of what's happened. So last year we talked about looking for progress rather than change. And World Social Work Day, the 20th of March, already been, Jerry?
Yeah.
It was a successful day, I think. Certainly was for us. Strengthening Practice actually did lots of busy tweeting on that day and was really active and mindful in remembering that it was World Social Work Day.
Yeah, and I had the chance to go to the BASWA, British Association of Social Workers celebration in London. I only got to the half of it that was about social work in the UK, but they'd had international speakers in the morning as well. And that was great because it was a real reminder of social work being a global profession. And it was interesting was World Social Work Day was also World Happiness Day. So the index of the happiness report that is published by the UN came out, and the things that they look for are all things that social work contributes to around relationships and poverty and opportunity and control over your life, those kind of things.
And I think that's a really nice place to start, because we were thinking about what topics do we want to talk about. And I have been reading up a lot lately about the idea of social protection and the role that social work plays in social protection. And so for people who kind of haven't thought about the role of social protection before, it's the state's obligation to alleviate the impacts of insecurity, poor health, economic and social vulnerability, and help preserve basic standards of living for all. And then it goes on to be more than that, actually, because it should actually also be preventative and sustainable, strengthen resilience in individual families and communities, and enhance the capability of the communities to actually be able to respond to the kind of, the risk or the movement in our life, the stress of life, I guess, because all life has stress in it. And it's about, how can social work play a role in actually creating resilience in societies and in communities. And I've been kind of doing a lot of thinking around that area lately. And I think that kind of, it flows nicely from what we have been doing, because I think we've been talking a bit, haven't we, about the fact that as an individual social worker, you want to do everything you can within your gift to feel competent and confident and to believe that the work you're doing is worthwhile and to make change for people whenever you encounter them. But we are in a context as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm really interested for us to be doing in the next series is to actually be talking a lot more actively about how we shape our context, not how we respond to it,
mm-hmm.
but how we shape it.
Yeah, so it's probably quite a good place to start, isn't it, in thinking about the context. And I know we talked about, I made some notes about the context and you said, oh, it's it's not your usual optimistic take on things. And it is pessimistic in lots of ways, the context. I think the funding context in the UK has got worse over the last year. And we are also just coming out of winter pressures where people have really been struggling because of health issues and also things like fuel poverty, much more evident in the winter. And councils have been using a lot of money to get through the winter. And we've had a recent kind of warning report from the National Audit Office that local authorities in England are on the brink of, some of them are on the brink of bankruptcy. Some of them are, a lot of them are spending their emergency reserves. And, you know, you see the impact of poverty within social work, the impact of austerity within social work. It was raised in the adoption inquiry that BASWA did. It's something that is clearly affecting disabled adults, people who are living with chronic conditions, people living with dementia. And, you know, we've had some quite big issues around things like changes to benefits that have affected people that we work with. So the context, I think, has got more difficult. And alongside that, we've had some quite striking reports about working conditions for social workers as well, around caseload levels. And one of the concerning ones was the report from Bath University and Social Work Union, which looked at working conditions for social workers and children and adults in England, and also looked at intention to leave the profession, and found that there was a very high proportion of social workers who were seriously considering leaving. So that overall context and the working context are not only obviously affecting work, but also affecting morale and sustainability. So the question is not how is it, but what do we do about it, I suppose? And where do we see green shoots and optimism? Where do we get our optimism and morale from?
Yeah, I think it's, but it is good to discuss the context honestly, because one of the things that often worries me is that sometimes in an attempt to manage difficulties, we tend to veer towards minimising them or dismissing them. Like saying, oh, things aren't that bad, or I've seen it worse than this before, or what about all these great things, instead of just actually stopping and going, actually, it has been a long, hard winter.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a very cold winter, and it's been a costly winter, as you say, and it's already, and we're coming at the end of a long period of financial pressures, and so of course that's going to make things tricky. So we are moving into a tricky spring and summer, I think, if you're working as a social worker in local authorities, or if you are a person who is reliant on local authorities for your care,
mm-hmm.
or for getting some of your needs met. And so for me, that's not about kind of running around and going, well, it's all doom and gloom, because it's clearly not. Humans are an ingenious people, and social workers amongst the most ingenious I know. And so I think that there is going to be ways that we can work together. But I do think we need to try and be kind to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that we need to acknowledge these difficulties, and it's time to really get creative and to perhaps talk honestly about what it is we can and can't deliver. Because I do think continuing to say that everybody has to deliver exactly the same things with less and less and less resources is definitely not an answer, is it?
Mm.
And so we've moved into a conversation that goes, well, no, we want people to deliver different things. But I think that definition of different is interesting.
Mm.
How do we understand what different looks like? And I guess some of the work that's been going on over the past year with the Innovations Project in Children's Services, where there's been funding and upskilling and resources put into working differently. Straight away, I think of Hertfordshire and the work they're doing, you know, with their child protection, where they're using motivational interviewing to try to keep people out of those great big formal meetings, support them in different preventative ways. There's different ways of responding in communities that is happening, and I think it's about, you know, continuing to watch those developments.
I think that's right. I think there's a few places to get motivation from when we have a scarcity, which is what we have. Mm-hmm. The first is resisting that kind of competition that comes from scarcity, where we start attacking each other and being really clear that we have to stand together as a profession. And you see that there's kind of good work happening from BASWA and from Principal Social Workers Networking Adults, definitely kind of talking about the importance of social work and trying to bring ideas and share learning. And BASWA's also doing some active campaigning around the context around austerity, the boot out austerity work and the anti-austerity action resource that they've got. And there's also work being done by BASWA around recognising the importance of working conditions for social workers. So there's all that sort of standing together and being quite clear about what we need to do around the context. But then there's also using the resources that we have in the best possible way. And some of that is knowing what we shouldn't be doing. So an example of that I was thinking about was the recent research report by Research in Practice around child sexual exploitation that looked at the different models that have been used to try to support young people and to combat that that crime and that abuse, and that pointed to the ones that were more helpful and the ones that were less helpful. And the same for the adoption inquiry. The adoption inquiry talks about the need to not rush into adoption when it's not the right thing, and to be really ethical about how adoption is used. So I think there's something about doing the right things, and there's also doing them in the right way, which is where your creative and innovative work comes in. And I agree with you, Hertfordshire is a really good example, because one of the things that I believe they're doing there is bringing adults and children's workers together in group supervision. So that's making the most use of that resource to get good judgments and good reflection. And, you know, supervision is a great example, actually, for how we can use a scarce resource well, because pretty much everyone's agreed that supervision is important and that we should be doing it and doing it regularly. But what you do with that time, avoiding doing problematic things in supervision, you're blaming or ordering or being dictatorial, and doing relational, helpful things that then bear fruit with that resource it's an example of how we can take a scarce resource and get more from it, get it right in that way.
And I think that you touched on group supervision there when you talked about adults and children's coming together. I do think that there is definitely a place for bringing supervision models into multi-agency meetings and really running those meetings with a clear, reflective, analytical structure to them. The things in children's services that is happening that I think is positive is the way they're trying to change the inspection regime, actually. And you know that they now go out with the social workers and they watch them work, and they're spending all their time, so they're doing less kind of inquiry of paper and more relationship observation with practitioners. And I've been in two authorities that have experienced this now just recently. And actually, the social workers were relaxed about their experience. Does that make sense? Like when they went out with the inspector, they felt relaxed and supported about it. And I thought that was a wonderful thing, I've got to say, because it's a long time since I've heard a social worker speak in terms of, oh, that was helpful, that was interesting.
Yes, and bringing in additional support around supervisory oversight as something helpful and relational does seem to be a kind of a positive trend over the last year, that that's starting to happen more. We've both been involved in supervision, reflective supervision projects, and we also see nationally that I don't know so much about the children's knowledge and skills statement for practice supervisors, but the adults one that's being developed at the moment is, you know, does have a lot in there about the relationship. And I think a really important thing that is being considered is practice observations as well. So that much more, that oversight through being present and observing rather than checking up on people and asking them what they've done. And we've seen some really good research from Harry Ferguson again this year around how social workers work with families and do that more relational, being present and observing and noticing rather than going in and interrogating.
I think that's a real strength that's come through this year, actually. And I don't, like I said, I don't want to over egg it to the point where I'm saying that every authority I go into, all the workers are saying that's what we're able to do, because they're sometimes still saying we can't do enough of this. But what I'm seeing that's different is a real awareness and a real belief and a real investment through their own behaviour and their own desires, and also through the local authorities to achieve that relational work. So I think that if we look over the past year, I think there's been a really strong recognition about the relationship that is fundamental in social work, and a bit of a move away from how technical we'd got. And much more direct work.
There's good things in adults as well around that, with the named social worker pilots for people with learning disabilities, which lots of people in learning disabilities would say that's been good practice forever to have a named person. But we've, through various structures and things like that, moved away from that too often. And also a lot more emphasis on conversation. Conversation is one of the big words in adult social work. Whatever model it is of conversation, it's about strength-based discussions with people about what's important to them and how to achieve that. And that's, again, what social work should be like, but it was becoming more of a technical task. And I think in some ways the scarcity has pushed us into doing more of the thing we know is always good, which is building a relationship. And we've needed to do that, because if you want to be creative and targeted and person-centered and tailored and use your resources in the best possible way, you've got to know the person. So my ideal would be being able to do that work plus having the resources.
Yes.
However,
I know. And I think that's right.
Having the emphasis on that work is good. Yeah. It is good.
Yeah. We can't ignore that. But I love the fact that I encounter so many social workers who have absolute clarity about the centralness and the importance of relationship now. And you know something? 5 years ago, I wasn't having that many conversations, in as many rich, really intentional conversations as I have with workers now. And that's despite the fact that they are feeling they are feeling really squeezed with their caseloads, and that they're not saying as much, we can't do it because of our caseloads. They're saying, we are determined to do this.
Yeah.
And our caseloads aren't helping, which is a kind of a different take to it.
Another interesting thing that we have going on, I think, is around support for social workers, and particularly recognition of social work expertise. So again, all of these things are a bit of a double-edged sword, aren't they? If you talk about support for social work resilience, you might mean genuine support for social work resilience, or you might mean trying to keep social workers going a bit longer in difficult conditions. The same goes for kind of social work excellence. If you're trying to strengthen people's practice and support like real unique offer from social workers, I think that's generally a positive thing, and being really being clear about what the social work offer is. And it also needs the resource to enable people to work in that way. But there's been a few things this year. So the refresh of the Professional Capabilities Framework in England by BASWA, that's just happened, and that's currently being consulted on, and that's making clearer the particular framework for social work practice through the whole profession, whatever specialism you're in and whatever role you've got. And there's also been other work around particular areas of work. So the one that I've been most involved in is older people's. I know there's been a lot of discussion as well around trying to be clear about what social workers bring to other areas of practice. And so in the older people's one, there has been a capabilities framework, capability statement and professional development pathway developed, which I see as a really positive thing. Again, so long as it doesn't splinter the profession, and so long as it makes sure that people are enabled to do that work.
I think there's been lots of good learning and development out there. I think the competition that's come up around learning and development in social work, I think for me, these the partnerships that are being created with the local authorities and the universities and them starting to develop their own centres for excellent practice, I think this is really, really given social work a boost in terms of its own competence and credibility. And what I see is that social workers themselves think of themselves as an academic and practical profession at the same time. They don't see a division in the way perhaps that they once used to. So they see themselves as learned, skilled professionals, and I think that's lovely. I'm really pleased with that. So, and I think a lot of that has come from the frameworks that you're talking about, and people using them carefully.
There's been a really positive development as well with the Professional Capabilities Framework Refresh, which is that there's been a statement from BASWA and the Chief Social Worker for Adults and the Chief Social Worker for Children in England to say this is how government statements of what social workers should be doing, and your Professional Capabilities Framework as a social worker fit together, and essentially that the Professional Capabilities Framework that comes from the profession is the kind of underpinning framework, and then the government will produce specific statements about particular roles or particular areas of practice. And I think that if we could all grasp that and be working from that same place, we would have a lot more chance of progress in good, clear, helpful professional development, because people go chasing standards that they're told they have to meet, and actually understanding where those come from and why they're there, that, you know, we are a global profession and we have a single framework that we all will work to that will unite us and bring us together. And then in your particular role or area of work, there will be other things that you'll need to consider. That just makes a lot more sense than, should I be doing the knowledge and skills statement today and the PCF tomorrow, or a different one the next week, or...
Yeah, I'm really keen for that too, Gerry. And I just think, you know, the idea of us, you know, social workers as human workers rather than children's workers or adults workers or mental health workers or this, you know, where we attend to the whole human. And one of the things that I'm very passionate about is that children, they don't exist by themselves. They are embedded in an adult system of some kind. By their age and stage of development, they have to be. And so, therefore, they can't be taken out of that context. And it means that good, strong partnership working between adult social workers and children's social workers is so fundamentally important. And drug and alcohol workers and mental health workers and anyone who is trying to contribute to a resilient and healthy society. We need to see ourselves as all on the same team, don't we? And that was when you were talking earlier about the fact that one of the key and critical things for social work across this country is that we must not fall into competition with each other. We really have to see each other as a resource, all striving for the same thing.
Yeah, and I think the focus is on, can you have focuses as plural? Probably not. The emphases on relationship and on sort of strength-based work and conversation and outcomes and human rights are the things that, that will keep us tied together. And the, you know, with the adults group in Baswa, some of the closest work we've done with the mental health group has been around the human rights areas, the Mental Capacity Act consultation and the Deprivation of Liberty consultation, because human rights is an obvious thread that comes through all of social work. So if we hang on to those kind of threads, the really big things that pull us together, that will help us a lot.
And I think it has been. I think what we're trying to say is that over the past year, as I think about this, I think our financial context and our resource context has got tougher and tougher. And I think that that is making it really, really hard to be a social work practitioner. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can pretend it's not. Alongside that, because yes, 54% of us might have an intent to leave the profession, that does mean 46% of us have an intent to stay in fairly tough environments. And I think some of that has come from this robust development of us as a profession and really taking that on board. And that leads me to the last thing that I think we should be doing. I would really love 2018 to be the year of social work conversations about advocacy. I would really like us now as a profession to grab a hold of that key component of social work, which is channeled towards shaping a system that preserves and enhances social relationships, that promotes social integration, and that contributes to the harmony and relationships of the whole of society. And so I think that we've got to see ourselves as much more than kind of handmaidens of places and spaces where people have been failed by society, and see ourselves much more as part of the mechanism that challenges why society has let people fall in the first place and advocates for a much more robust response. So I'd really like to see the conversations just move slightly away from relationship and away from our own skills and talents and all the things that we have to do as an individual, moving into what's my responsibility as an advocate in our society, given where we are financially. So I guess a lot more buy into the Boot Out Austerity campaign. I would really love to see us en masse.
Yeah, and I think the link there with in much more genuine and common and widespread co-production and partnership working with people who experience social work and the people who haven't yet but might, and the people who never got it even though they should have, and the people who got it in a way that wasn't helpful to them. All of that joint voice is really going to be crucial, because we run the risk always, don't we, if we try and act and advocate without genuine partnership of advocating for ourselves. To kind of bring that together then, think about implications for practice in the year ahead. There are new ideas emerging, aren't there? Some of them as a matter of course, because we're always learning, we are a learning profession, and some of them through force of circumstance, I suppose, the creative and unusual that's appearing. I think we do need to keep looking for that and sharing it.
And trying to look for evidence of impact on service users. It's one thing for us to think these are great ideas, but are they actually making difference to people's everyday lives is critical.
The other thing that we need to resist is the latest, greatest thing.
Yeah.
This idea that there are quick wins and that we can just... or that we can just take something and drop it in somewhere else and it will be fine. So there's an ongoing use and need for judgment and evidence and thoughtfulness about things, particularly when we're rushing.
And persistence, Jerry. Mm. I think one of the things for me is, and I think local authorities are particularly guilty of this, that they don't give enough time for something.
And we need to keep trying to influence those learning context and those practice contexts and the wider social context, and that can't all be left to the hard-pressed practitioners. That's something that, as a whole profession, through BASWA, through Principal Social Worker Networks, through lobbying to the government, through working with the Chief Social Workers, that we need to be. And we've got a real opportunity over the next year, certainly in adult services, to influence the Green Paper on adult social care. So that sort of clarity about what social work can offer, and that belief in social work and belief in our purpose, will then enable us to be much more clear about what we need to do our job well, and be arguing for it from an evidenced position.
And I think for me that leads to what we, you and I, need to do our job well, because one of the things I think about is that as we're still social workers that have stepped outside of direct practice to try to find ways to support and encourage and maintain social work, one of the things that we need is a bit of co-production, Jerry. And so I would once again just say to the people who do listen to us, please always feel free to write in and say, you know, this is a topic we'd be interested in. This, I'd love to come and talk to you guys, or whatever it is, so that we're actually getting really good, strong key messages from the people that we're wanting to talk with and understand and kind of strive for, in a way.
And in the year ahead, we're going to be looking at, we're going to be using our series three in two interesting ways, hopefully interesting ways. One is to think about the social work journey with people that we work with. So to really think about that practice relationship and go back to the real essence of social workers' direct work, and how we start and move through and finish that work with people well. And the other is to bring in more ideas from other disciplines. Social work is great at taking from other places and incorporating. Yeah, so we're going to try and be bring in some very, you know, hopefully more diverse and interesting ideas from other disciplines that might just give us some insight and some reflection.
Sounds good. I'm really looking forward to it.
So there's a couple of reflective points from our review of the year, which are, firstly, what can we each do to help social work make more difference in the particular activities that we undertake? And that's not about doing more, that's about thoughtfulness in the way that we do things. And then really crucially, who can we each join up with to help to shape the context more? Because that isn't an individual, you know, crusading heroic role, is it? That needs us all to work collaboratively. Thanks so much, Jo, and thanks everyone for listening.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.